multitude of other substances, but it's also when we as a society became addicts. Instead of it being in the 20s, now it was the teens. And now it was the early teens. And by the 80s, we were a society in which our children were addicts. Our children. By the time they were in their early teens, they were going to rehab. Parents no longer knew how to parent. Something was tremendously wrong. You see, parents who give their children choice at age 3. Do you want this or do you want that? No, this is what you do. You get this done. And you don't give them the power to manage you. It's just not an option. Because that's never going to stop at that point. What are they thinking? But parents lost their power to what? The victim. The victim. Look what happened in our society. The wounded child took over. The wounded child and the victim. So afraid were we, and that people are, and they still are, that someone's going to report them to 911. In the classroom, in the school, the victim now commands the society, and it swung it into the role of entitlement. And what you are now observing is the angry part of society taking it back from the victim now. And you're going to see it done with a vengeance. It ain't going to be pretty. And that's what you're looking at. If I'm just teaching you laws, addicts get addicted to the easy way out. Remember that. When someone says to me that an addiction is a disease, I don't buy it. And I never will. That's me. And believe me, I buried my brother. And I was with him all the time. And it was a tragic and nasty horribleness. But it's hard-pressed for me to say that it was alcohol that he was addicted to. It wasn't. He was addicted to his attitude, to his righteousness and to his anger. He was addicted to that. He was addicted to that. He was addicted to his rage. That was his addiction. And his pride, mostly to his pride. And because pride, his addiction to his pride was so strong, pride causes you to go to war. You can only go to war if you have issues with pride, because it's first chakra. And that's your battlefield. We went to war as a country because of our pride. Nobody's going to hit us. Well, look where it got us. Look where it got us. Can you call pride a disease? Is that a disease? No, it's a choice. It's a choice. Stop undercutting the power you have in choice. You cannot say you create your own reality and then say, except here. Except here. Except where I don't want to say I create my own reality. You don't get that. You either do or you don't. You either have free will or you don't. You cannot say, except here. Except when it comes to addiction. Because I don't like to own that shoving a needle in my arm is actually my choice. That shoving sugar down my throat, that overshopping is actually my choice. I simply don't want to admit these because they come in the category of embarrassment. So it's easier for me to say, I'm not responsible. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. You're totally responsible. I'm responsible for my addictions, every one of them. Absolutely. And the great challenge is the more conscious we become, the more what we realize is I simply have to take this on consciously now. It's rigorous. It's rough, but I'm going to do it. This is how it's done. It's rigorous, it's rough, but you're going to do it. as we exist in this new place, this new millennium, the challenge in front of us is that we have a lot more sacred knowledge about what we do and why. We have a lot more sacred knowledge about what compels us to make the decisions we do. That's what inner awareness is all about. We have a lot more understanding about when you have a craving for something. What you now know is there are big consequences to that craving. It's not just a craving. When I continue with this, I'm going to talk to you about three realms of addiction: hell, craving, and your animal instincts, and how they organize, and speak to you about addiction, how they compel you, and how you have to deal with those three forces, and the challenge that brings to you. But where we're going is this: you can't tell yourself that you don't have options now. You can't tell yourself that you don't have a choice. You cannot tell yourself that, well, I'm an addict. That's very last century. How last millennium? You can't do that. That was last century's song and dance. That belongs to people who insist that substance is stronger than their soul, than their psyche. And if you maintain that, then you also have to maintain that you will never be able to heal one thing in your body. That you will not be able to heal pain. You will not be able to heal cancer, because all of those forces will be stronger than you. What can you do? Why train your soul at all? Why bother? The whole reason you're on this path of inner illumination is so that you can stand up to what essentially is a state of consciousness. Addiction is a state of how you understand your relationship with physical reality. That's all. It is not some dark demon that has you possessed forever. It's a relationship you have with the world of matter versus the stamina of your soul. That's it. And that's everything. And number two, we close this by you understanding every single human being walks on this path. Every single human being is on the path of refining their soul, of awakening it so that it is stronger than the force the physical world has over them. So when you think about whatever struggles you have, if you ever tell yourself it's all about you, then once again, you're telling yourself a story that is not true. You're addicted to a story that's simply not true. It's all about every one of us. This is the journey we share together. It is the human journey. Now we get to you as addict. You. So the first thing we're going to do is this. You're going to close your eyes. Then you're going to take a deep breath and you're going to say, "Hover over me, God. Because I'm going to take this seriously. Hover over me, God. Because some part of me, maybe a great deal of me, is controlled by illusions in this world. What Buddha calls illusions. They call my name. They're stronger than me. Part of it's greed. Part of it's the attention of others. Part of it's stuff. Maybe part of it's substance. Part of it is wounds that are stronger than me. Anger, emotions, power. Maybe I want more power. Power plays. Maybe I simply don't give in. Maybe I have to have the last word. Maybe I need to be right. Maybe when I start unfolding all the things I'm addicted to, there simply is no end. Maybe I want to toss myself over a bridge right now. But at the end of the day, it comes down to, I don't trust you. I don't trust that you're there. I don't trust that my inner world, the world I cannot see, the world I cannot taste, the world I cannot smell, the world I cannot feel, the world I cannot hear, is stronger, more real, more authentic, more powerful than this world I can see that always lets me down, the world I can taste that frequently poisons me, the world I can hear that often tells me lies, the world I can touch that slips right out of my hands. When I do hear you, you've never betrayed me. So hover over me, God, and never let me go. Amen. Okay. Let's go to work. Now, how well do you know yourself? Isn't that a good question? How well do you know yourself? How well does anyone know themselves? So we begin by looking at ourselves as addicts, looking at ourselves in addiction. Through that lens, how well do I know myself? Where am I other than here? What commands me? What drives me to despair? I'm going to put this journey we're going on into three levels. We're going to call it three worlds. When these worlds emerge is when you will go into and indulge the worst of your addictive behavior. If I said to you, what are your addictions? You'll maybe name two. You'll probably start with something silly, something useless, like chocolate, like something stupid. But if I were there and by the time I'm done with you, I'd have 20. Because I would go into the micro. So I'm going to tell you to put a word down. If you're listening to this CD, to write a word down, and that's power. Power. Reflect on the word power and your relationship to power as I describe the first world that we go into. I want you to image yourself in the icon that I use, if you've ever seen the icon that I draw when I teach about the human energy system. And I frequently draw just a stick figure with lines coming into the top of the head. And then I put a parenthesis around that stick figure. It's a very easy image to sketch as I've just talked it out. A stick figure with lines coming in that represent circuits of energy or grace coming in. And then I put you in a parenthesis. The parentheses represent you in a complete bubble of energy. That's your parameter. That's your personal energy field. And the circuits coming in through the top of the head, literally your life force, your grace coming in. And in an ideal world, which none of us lives in, but in an ideal world, imagine that those circuits recycle. The grace comes in and we are able, because of our awareness, to distribute the grace consciously. If you can imagine yourself back in this bubble, picture the circuits puncturing through your bubble and attaching, constantly attaching to people and all kinds of things in the outside world, rapidly just shooting out of you because you can't contain it. You can't contain your own energy. You can't manage it. Every judgment you make, everything you know you should do or not do, but you do it anyway. And I'm going to hit a pause button right here. I'm going to ask you to do something. I'm going to take you back to a very early memory. And this is an important memory. You need to go back with me to a memory that you have, and I know you have it. And it's somewhere around 6 to 7. At about that age, an experience happened to you in which you crossed the bridge and you either told your first lie or you stole your first little thing that wasn't yours. You did something. The second part of this experience is that you were caught or you were put on the spot and you were asked if in fact you did this. The third part of the experience is that you heard a voice instruct you very clearly to tell the truth. You absolutely heard that voice. Now, the fourth part of that experience is that you realized you heard that voice. This is a moment of illumination. This is your first mystical experience. And believe me, you remember this. It's there. The memory is there, I promise you. It stands out because it contains every one of these stages to it. Every one of them. The fifth part is how you answered it. I can't speak for all of you, of course, but I can't speak for most. And for most people, what they did is they stepped across the Rubicon and they denied the lie. They said, no, I didn't do it. Or, no, I didn't take it. 8 out of 10 people stepped across the Rubicon and stuck with the lie, stuck with the dark story. Or if they didn't, the consequences of sticking with the truth proved to be, for them, very traumatic. In either case, for most people, usually because they stuck with breaking their connection with their inner voice, is that the association happens that truth is painful. Telling the truth results in punishment. Telling the truth is a bad thing. Not telling the truth, finding a way to hide it, is a good thing. So therefore, I have to find a way to always not tell the truth, to hide it. It becomes an unconscious imprint. It becomes okay to dodge the bullets, to dodge truth. From that moment on, what comes out of your throat, which is the center of addiction, it becomes a necessity. Instead of speaking spontaneously when someone asks you, how do you feel? Do you want to talk about this? If you were clear, if you were congruent, you would feel very comfortable speaking congruently about how you felt. Your heart would blend easily with your mind. And out from your throat, your fifth chakra, would come conversation. It wouldn't be processing unspoken feelings from your past that need endless processing. You would be present. You'd just be present and able to speak. You wouldn't be delving into mysteries as to why you've been so confused and in pain. You simply would be present. And if something didn't work out, you'd be able to take it. You'd be able to take life as life. You would be in the flow. Wouldn't be perfect. Nothing's perfect. But when it fell into imperfect, even imperfect would be doable, workable, functional. You would not become dysfunctional because you were going through difficulty. You'd get it. You would cease taking life personally as if the whole of the cosmos was simply punishing you. You'd stop with your narcissism. And you'd develop a far more mature portrait of this journey called life. You'd get over yourself. You would speak truth to yourself. And you'd get over these stories and fictions that you tell yourself. You'd stop telling yourself fiction. And when people began to talk to you about truth, you would stop declaring them the enemy in your life. You would stop calling them insensitive because they were bringing truth to your door. You would cease saying, I need to hang with people who simply support my myth and my stories and my narratives in my support groups because I can't bear to have someone actually tell me the truth. I can't go there. We have become so incapable of truth that we go to therapy for sometimes 20 years before we can approach one pure, truthful sentence. Yes, you did it. Yes, this happened. Sometimes 20 years. Now, you may not find that astounding, but I do. Now, the moment, the experience that created this imbalance, that made truth the bad guy of the psyche, was then, at 6, 7 years old, when we were first asked in this extraordinary initiatory moment, what do you trust, the inner or the outer? Some people get through this initiatory experience. Some people make it through. George Washington. That's the famous legend. George, did you chop down the cherry tree? I cannot tell a lie. When did that happen? When he was 7. At that critical passage, I cannot tell a lie. Interestingly enough, that myth was at this age, at the critical passage. My inner soul, my inner psyche, line up and snap in place at that age. Conscience snaps in place with consciousness. And an intuitive voice locks in that becomes stronger than the outer force. That's what happens when you pass the test. When you don't pass the test, the outer voice becomes stronger, and what we have is the birth of the real baby addict. This is the person most likely to begin to view the world as a potential arena from hell, in which they are powerless, seeking power, whereas the other one will see the world with them as powerful, maneuvering power within the world. The archetypal difference. Can you speak? Can you hold truth at age 7? Are you able to do it? Can you see accurately and actually hold it? Can you do it? And in able to do that, your 7th, your 6th, your 5th, and your 4th chakras become congruent. If you can't, they develop a type of scoliosis. They form a kind of incongruent relationship. forming a natural addiction. Now, let's shift to what triggers and how you perceive that. Let's divide consciousness into worlds and realms. Let's just make it like floors of a condominium building, or worlds or realms. So let's call it worlds. And each world of consciousness, in keeping with Buddha, Buddha would call it a perceptual system, a world that we enter into. It's just a perception, just an attitude. And you can relate to this because I'll give you your own experience. Everybody knows what it's like to go from an experience of a huge panic fear only to find out they have nothing to worry about. I remember, for example, thinking I lost my wallet. Well, you know what's in your wallet. I was preparing to go overseas the next day. I had gone to the bank. I had my passport, my driver's license. I had 4 credit cards. And let's just go on and on, okay? I had. And what happened was my wallet fell out of my purse underneath my chair at the restaurant, and it was the same color as the rug. It had the same color in it. So I never thought to look down. And then what happened was I stopped at a Walgreens to get something on my way home. And I can't find my wallet. Now, as it turned out, I had stopped in that Walgreens on my way there for something. I go back to that Walgreens and I actually made the security people play the camera of when I bought to see if the checkout girl or someone else took my wallet. But it clearly showed me putting it back in my purse, which meant that it had to be at the restaurant. So I go to the restaurant and this whole time the panic attack in me is off the charts. Now, I had eaten at that restaurant all the time, so they knew me. And so I came back in and I said, you know, blah, 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 blah. And I go back and sure enough, it was underneath the chair. They hadn't even seen it because of the color blend. So all of you know what it's like to go from one complete state of consciousness where you feel helpless, panic, fear, drained, where you are completely hemorrhaging. Now, Buddha would walk in at this point and say to you, are you in hell? And you would say, actually, I feel like I'm in hell. I feel completely helpless. I feel panic stricken. I feel blah, 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 blah. Buddha would say, this is an illusion. What's the illusion here? Buddha would say, you don't have your wallet. But what's all this drama about? How does all this emotional upset, your drama, your screaming, your expletives, and there were plenty, help the fact that your wallet's not here? Tell me how this is changing things. Tell me how all this drama and all this hysteria is making one bit of difference to whether or not you get the wallet back. I just want to know that, Buddha says. I just want to know that. You could choose any state of consciousness you want right now. You could look at this and say, oh, this is hilarious. I mean, this is really funny. I think I'm going to just laugh my way through this. The only reason you're not is because you're convinced that laughter would result in you not taking it seriously. Like the wallet gives a damn whether you take it seriously. What it means is you worship money. You are addicted to its power over you. And if you don't worship it and take it seriously, it won't respect you and come back and you will be punished and it will go away. And that's the mythology. That's what Buddha would say. That's what's really going on. So let's go to this first world. In the first world, what drives you into your forms of despair that can cause you into addiction is complete powerlessness, where you feel every form of power that you have is completely gone. Now, in order for you to really get this, you have to get yourself. How well do you know yourself? How well do you know what scares you? What is your relationship to power? What's your relationship? Define hell. What's your definition of hell? Do you even know what that is? Do you even know what that is? What would make you feel completely powerless? Would you know what kind of addictions would mark the fact that I am on my way to hell? If I keep up these decisions, these choices, I am on my way to hell. And if you really recognize and stop yourself and do what I'd say, hit your pause button and truly pray, go inside, hover over me, God, and be still. You would recognize, admit that at any given moment, that voice that was there that you heard when you were 7 is still there. And it's still telling you, don't make this decision. Don't go here. Don't do this. The first world of hell is about what makes you feel completely helpless. Helpless and hopeless. What are the decisions, choices, conditions that you get in that just take hope away from you? Now, this is a big question to ask and to present you with. It's truly huge, because in addiction, in the classic 12-step program, they talk about bottoming out, that you bottom out. And then in bottoming out, you lose all sense of hope. But I'm going to take it one step further and say to you that this isn't about you bottoming out necessarily. This is about the forces around your own life bottoming out that you seem unable to stop. The company that you're with turns out to be as fraudulent as Enron. You had your money invested in that. You trusted a company to take care of you. You trusted a system that's just simply no longer honorable. You trusted something to hold together, and it's just not holding together. You trusted the currency to hold its value, and it's not going to. You trusted this, and you trusted that. And there's nothing we can do about it. Absolutely nothing. There's nothing as a supplement. There's nowhere to go. Anybody who knows history, economics, the writing's on the wall. Most people don't, so they can't see a thing. They just think it's going to go on forever. Okay. Well, I'll just save more. Save more what? That helplessness is your first world, and it is hell. And what you're addicted to is the world you want versus the world that is. The world that's changing faster, and you have no power over it. You're addicted to an image and a form, to a previous century, to a previous millennium, and it's already gone. It's already gone. And it's an addiction to ideas, to a nation that's gone, to a world that's gone, to a constitution that's gone. Gone. Hell happens when you can't face
where you are
and what's changing because you didn't face what's happening where you are under the ground beneath your feet. You can be addicted to the way things always were and not grasp Buddha's law. Change is constant. Change is constant. All things must change. When you are in the first world of hell and you realize, oh my God, this is not the same world. The world we are living in is changing at such a speed that it is different week to week. It changes now in 1 week in what it used to take a year. That's how fast this exponential speed is going now. Changes that fast. That when you find yourself so addicted to the old world that you just can't cope. You think, this is hell. I just can't face what's happening. I can't. This is when you pull back and you say, no, I'm not going to eat my way through this. I'm not going to drink my way through this. I'm going to transcend and ascend my way through with higher teachings and truths that say change is constant. This was coming. The last half century was about preparing for this. We just didn't realize it was really going to happen. That it would really be this way. And what's worse is you were addicted to the belief that it was only going to happen to everybody else. And that transformation for you was simply going to take place in your mind. That it was never really going to touch the U.S. economy. That it was never really going to touch us because nothing ever touches us. You were addicted to a myth that we were impervious to the problems of other countries. This is where, if we were gathered together, we would pull our chairs around a fireplace and begin to share with each other the myths we hold that we simply can't bear to let go of. We just can't bear it. It's hell for us to let go of these beliefs. But holding on to them is a form of hell. It keeps us in hell. It keeps us politically in hell, economically in hell. You lose your job, for example, and you keep looking backwards to what you used to do and who you used to be. You keep basing your future on what you've always done, not recognizing there is no always anymore. You're unable to hear that voice telling you where to go next. You're unable to do that. You just can't do it. You can't feel your way through it. And you see the hell you create because you insist on holding on to these myths. This is one form of addiction. I am addicted to the way it was. I'm addicted to a world I'm more comfortable in and I can't let go. There's a part in all of us that never wants to let go of the world we loved so much. And here's where I want to step in and gather you around and say, okay, now listen to me. Believe it or not, this is the most extraordinary time of all to be alive. There's never been a moment like this. There's never been a time like this in the history of human civilization. Believe me when I tell you. They're going to write a lot about this time we live in. They're going to wonder how we made it through this, if we make it through it. They're going to wonder about our stupidity. About our stupid decisions, which are from here to there. But they're also going to marvel at the unbelievable amount of light and guidance that is pouring in now. The unbelievable. We can't see it so much because you can't see the forest for the trees, and we are those trees. So here I have to say to you, the addictions of this first world of hell have to do with what makes me feel powerless. And these are going to come up when you realize my world is changing, because all of us, our world is changing. And when you feel powerless, when you feel like power's taken away from you, in the extreme, the most extreme of this is to be put into some place like Auschwitz. There's nothing worse. There's nothing worse. To have your identity taken, your body taken, your family taken. You have nothing but whatever you can hold on to in yourself. That is hell. You are standing in a room. It's just a room. It's just a room. It may be a room in the worst place in the world, but it's just a room. Repeat it. It's just a room. It's just a room. And you have to hold that reality moment to moment to moment to moment. Don't let them break through that. Do not stretch your mind down a week or a year because you're not strong enough to hold your position of protection. You have to reduce it to your stamina to get through minute by minute, because you haven't the psychic strength to hold yourself longer than minute to minute, and therein lies your protection. If you are even close to understanding what I just told you. Okay? Your way through not letting your soul drain out of yourself and into a field that you say, this is going to defeat me. The world is illusion. Everything out there can change in the blink of an eye. You say to me, I don't get it. And I say to you, let me take you back in time. It's October 28th, 29th, 30th, 1929. The stock market crashes. In the blink of an eye, the world changed. 2008 October, blink of an eye, the market crashed. Our whole banking system, it's impossible. It couldn't crash. It couldn't. Not our banking system, not ours. Could our standard, could S&P ever lower its rating of the U.S. dollar? Impossible. Oh, really? In the blink of an eye, we are well on our way to becoming a second status country. We have nothing to export, nothing to buy, but we can still bomb. Okay, now, what Buddha says is, remember, everything is an illusion. It can change in the blink of an eye. Do not attach. Do not say, I have to have this way. I must have the old century back. I must have my power back. I must live on the street again. I must have a $400,000 house. I must have this. No, no, no. You must have nothing. You need nothing. Attached to nothing. Nothing, nothing. Attached to nothing. Not your identity. Not your status, not your job. You will adapt. You will do what you need to do. You will hear your guidance. Become fluid like a Tai Chi master. Form a community. Form a wisdom circle. Move only forward and present. Don't look back. You start moving in this direction so that you no longer think in terms of your age. It's not allowed. In terms of your income, not allowed. You begin to leave behind the things through which you valued yourself in the last century. They don't count in this century because they don't have any power. They don't have any power. What has power here are your psychic skills, your capacity to adapt, to think fast, to pull in guidance, to be clear, to decide fast, to heal with your hands, to read intuitively, to channel grace. The skills of this century are mystical clarity and the graces, the inner ones over the outer. Those are the ones. Okay? You got to pull back your soul and be able to stand up and say to yourself, I will not fall into that hell. That world is not going to command me, no matter what that person says. Hurry up, the sky is falling, Chicken Little. You can command yourself to be still while that person's screaming at you. No matter what I say, it does not move your meter. No matter what, it does not move your meter. You might think, that's a high order. No, 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 it's not. What would I train you to do if I had to? I would train you to simply be neutral. No attachment. So if someone said, this is a bad virus, not for you. Not for you. That sounds ridiculous, Carol. How can you do this? No, no, no. Your vibrational field can block. It is itself an immune system. If you understand the laws of cause and effect, magnetic attraction, you have to learn how to use them as the fundamental vibrational field of your immune system. Addicts have no immune system because you are fully addicted to the physical world. You simply want everything, which brings us to world number two, the world of cravings. So when someone says addiction, I'm going to say cravings. I'm going to ask you something now. As we enter the second world, what do you crave? What do you crave? It's a strong word. What do you hunger for? What do you crave? Let's talk about that in terms of where you're out of control. What do you have to have? What do you crave? Then I'm going to just throw out some words. Vengeance. And when I say vengeance, that doesn't mean you sit around like a Machiavellian drama where you want to pull out, you know, a saber and go and chop someone's head off. But there's a combination of vengeance justice that lives in this world that says, I'm simply right. I need to get my point across. Where you push to the point where what you're looking for is, I will be acknowledged. I will be understood. I will be. And it comes from the belief that certain things just shouldn't have happened to you. They just shouldn't have happened to you. That the system was unfair. Now, let me push this a little further. I've been teaching a long time. I've come to realize there are people who've really have had hellish childhoods. I mean, their parents should be punished. And that's all there's to it. And with that in mind, as I said earlier, the model we have of healing is simply unrealistic. We have a model of healing that suggests we get all healed, then we get going. That we are sick, we are wounded, and we get ourselves all healed, and we forgive all and everybody, and now that we're all healed and all better, and life is sunshine. The picture that we have of how this is supposed to work is absolutely preposterous. It just doesn't work that way. It never has, and it never will. The fact is, when you are wounded, when you are brought up by wounding giants, the only two giants you know, who are organically, inherently supposed to protect you, and they wound you, and they form you that way, you, this soft little clay, that's going to stay with you. It's simply going to stay with you. And that's all there's to it. You can't figure out your map. What did I do? What did I do? That's not going to come out of you. Your choice is, I got to figure out a higher map to negotiate this, because I will drown under the weight of this. I will, because it will forever hurt you, and there's no way around that. And that's what needs to be acknowledged. Number two, you can't keep acknowledging it every single day. You also have to say, that's enough. I got it. I know it's there. But I will not let you use it in this room. You're not the only injured party on this planet. And my life can't be used to make your life better because you've had injuries. That's not the way the game's played. And number three, my workplace is not a therapy place. So that's not going to happen. Okay, so you rise up to the level of functional. Compassionate and functional is going to have to become a model that we strive for. Compassionate and functional, both together. Because I serve you not at all. By indulging your wound, I will not let you go backwards, and you will not drag me backwards. Because if you take me back where I don't belong, which is in your history, I will come to resent you. And then I will want to never see you again. Because I don't like it back there. It's dark, it's dismal, and it's suffocating for someone like me. And you crave that place. And what I need to point out to you is it doesn't make sense to crave a place that abused you when you can be free. When you can be free. So I present to you that it doesn't make any sense. That you should build yourself a higher scaffold so you can walk over it. You can see it. You know it's still there. But the odor from that can't get into your nostrils anymore. It can't grab you. It can't smother you with its toxicity. But it's there. And you can walk over it like a cat bridge. As if you're visiting something in a zoo. It's there. You see it. And sometimes you have to walk back and just check your memory out. That's right, it's there. Because it is there. And it is part of you. But you have to battle the craving you have to go back there and tempt it. To play with it, to pick at it, to say, let me see what has more power over you, you or this memory, to dance with it, to beat it up so it beats you up all over again. So then you come out and you're bloodied again. And then you get to do this, turn on addiction number two. The right to make someone else suffer. To punish someone for something they didn't do. To punish someone else because somehow or other that part of your life was not perfect. The addiction to the permission to make someone else suffer. Well, I've had a bad day. You don't understand my childhood. You don't understand this. I get to do what I want to do. I get to say this. You don't get it. And pretty soon, people who had nothing to do with your pain, nothing whatsoever, are apologizing to you for complaining that you're beating them up. I'm sorry I didn't realize. That's right, I forgot. That's okay. You can come in here and scream and yell and kick us around and do whatever you want because you had a bad childhood. And that's why they don't understand you at work. And that's why they neglected you and blah, 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 blah. instead of finally looking at you and saying, you know what? Get out of here. Really, get out of here. Pack your bags, take your childhood, and get the hell out of here. I never want to see you or your childhood again. I'm not a punching bag for the last 50 years. Get out of here. I don't take my childhood out on you. When you want to come back here and be in present time like an adult, I will be here. But you don't get to pass your pain on to me as a way of controlling me. So if you're addicted to that little game, I'm calling you on it. Okay, now that's a craving. And when I said vengeance, that's this. Right here. Right here. It's the privilege that because you've suffered, you get to make someone else suffer. Because your suffering is more than someone else's. It's not rational. It's not logical. You may get up in the morning a totally sane person by your definition. These myths of the werewolf, of people who change under the full moon, of the banshee, of the vampire, these myths of shapeshifters, they come from human behavior that is unexplainable, in which we go from one extreme archetypal pattern to another, in which suffering is involved. And the desire to hurt people, to cause pain and inflict pain. This is where sadism comes from. Let's make no mistake here. These are the beginning threads of sadistic behavior. Call it what it is. I am passing my pain on to you. I have an agenda. I want to see you feel pain so that you turn around and come rushing toward me and say, is this what you're feeling? Oh, you poor thing. And then I get to control you. But what's the control mechanism? The control mechanism is pain. It's not looking toward the other person to empower them, but to disempower them, to render them helpless through pain. To crave their disempowerment through guilt, through pain, through torture. To torture them. Just for the record, those are the seeds of sadism. You may think, oh, that's extreme. No, it's not. No, it's not. Let's take it down to something more realistic. What do you crave? Your cravings are what will trigger your addictions. These are your addictions, but they're also what trigger you to turn on your mythologies in order to rationalize your addictions. Okay, so I want you to picture that you have like those videos or Netflix in your head. And every craving has a Netflix. Every craving has a Netflix, and that's how you rationalize your craving. A story you tell yourself. This is okay for me to have this because. This is okay for me to do this because. Okay, so when you look at cravings, it's okay for me to crave shopping because. That could be a deserve Netflix. Like the shopaholic. It's okay for me to do this because. It's okay for me to have this because cravings. Get into your micro detail because that's an intense world. And you have to go through every one of your quadrants, your emotional cravings, your psychic cravings, psychological cravings, physical cravings. What do you tell yourself that you know is not true? Name at least five of those. Let's go to the third world. Here's another world that fosters addiction. It's the world of your animal nature. Okay. And this is the world where we investigate what we will do that comes from instinctive animal response.